global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. S&P 500 index tumbled the most in more than a month as the possibility that the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates as early as December weighed on equities. S&P 500 index down 20 points to 2,078, a drop today of 1%. NASDAQ down 51 points, a decline also of 1%. The Dow was down 179 points, a drop there of 1%. 10-year down 7/32 at yield 2.35%. Crude oil down 0.7%. A barrel of West Texas Intermediate down 29 cents to $44 a barrel. I'm Charlie Pellett, and that's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
You're listening to Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Kathleen Hayes on Bloomberg Radio.
7 years after the collapse of Lehman Brothers led to a domino effect that ended up jolting the whole global economy, is it possible that rules have been in place that definitively end too big to fail? Has the Financial Stability Board, created by the group of 20 nations in the aftermath of the crisis, published a plan for making sure that giant lenders can be wound down and recapitalized in an orderly way, and this above all, without taxpayer bailouts? We're very happy to be joined now by Doug Sciocca. He's CEO and partner at Kavar Capital. He says this is definitely an important step. He's here to explain what it is and what it's going to do. So, Doug, what are they proposing? One of the biggest takeaways from our Bloomberg story is the world's biggest banks may need to raise as much as $1.2 trillion, an additional, to meet these new rules.
Thanks, Kathleen. Hi, Pim. Yeah, I think that you know, the task is daunting, but I think it's a little bit of a relief. There had been speculation that those ratios were going to actually even be higher, so the amount of capital they were going to have to raise was going to be more, even in the $2 trillion range. But I think, in general, it's positive in that it should be immunizing the two sort of bifurcating components of a bank. You have the utility-like characteristics of a bank and the casino-like characteristics of a bank. I think distinguishing between the two is a very positive development and ultimately should save the general public from sharing burdens of risk that they may not have been complicit in structuring to begin with.
Doug Sciocca, why don't they just change the compensation structure at these banks in order to align people's decision-making with prudent lending rather than putting together some artificial number that would state the bank's necessary capital?
You know, Pim, I think that could be a next phase in the progression of the unwind of government intervention in the banking business, right? I think, right, eventually banks have to progressively regress to the role of umpire or a referee and not in the form of a quote-unquote point-shaving participant, right? Their actions during the financial crisis, while very, very noble in intent, they were reasonably arbitrary, right, in hindsight. And banks that survive then are arguably just as risky today, if not riskier, which is why they're putting this TLAC into position. As they step out and require banks to raise capital in the form of equity or even debt, even in the senior level, that does have risk of default, they have to, you would think, elevate the conscientiousness in the decision-making of the loan committees that are extending credit to entities that run the risk of not paying them back. So I think it's a progression in that direction.
Question from a listener. Is this going to be a law for banks, an actual law that everybody's going to sign on to now, or just a suggestion? And if so, who enforces it?
Great question. I presume it will become part of whether it's a new law, Kathleen, or whether it is something that gets folded in to Dodd-Frank that's now 5 years in the making. But the FSB, I'm frankly not clear on their ability to set that as a legal requirement, given how far-reaching from a global perspective it is.
Well, in this case, are they just going to create an even larger shadow banking system?
Well, I hope would be, Pim, and maybe that has a negative implication, but what I'm hoping is we would see more of a reacquainting in regional and community banking. Right? Kathleen, what I thought was a fascinating statistic from a Harvard business school study that from the years of 1994 to 2014, community bank share of U.S. lending has nearly been cut in half, from 41% to 22%. Now, you would presume that a beneficiary of this new legislation, given that most community and regional banks have a higher understanding of knowledge of their client and their counterparty, whom the collateral is that they're representing the loan to be based upon, this should be a boon in the presence of reduced regulations and fees for community and regional bankers to survive regardless.
I don't understand. How can that be true when they basically told the banks you can't raise capital by issuing preferred shares? So where were they going to get the money to lend in the first place?
The community banks?
Yeah.
But the community banks would lend on based on deposits. I mean, this goes back to the old model. It's the utility-like characteristics of a bank. So you've taken your deposits, you have a certain leverage requirement that you have, and then you actually experience this multiplier effect as you express money into the communities, and you thankfully are going to be paid back, so you reserve a heck of a lot less of that capital for loan loss reserves.
And this is exactly what the regulators want to see, I think. Banks more like utilities and less like just money machines and more like investment banks. There is a bit in here about emerging markets. They're going to have a much longer time to sign on to these rules. You're concerned about that. Why?
I think it's pristine in its intentions, but any time a credit market participant shows their hand, right, arbitrage opportunities can be very punishing. So if you're an emerging market economy, that many of whom have natural resource-based lending entities, right, whether it's Venezuela or it's other Latin American countries or Turkey or even some of the peripheral European countries or Middle Eastern countries, when your collateral has its price set on a global basis and it's commodity-related, and now you're forced to raise additional capital, and you'll do so in a very, very disciplined underwriting fashion, the cost of that capital could be so onerous that it takes them out of a viable competitive position globally.
Quick question, Doug. Is this a bad thing for the big banks? Should their share price be sold off on this, or is it ultimately better?
It's much better. I think these bigger banks have so much fluff, and thankfully with the minimization of securitization, a little bit more transparent. But I think this actually will separate wheat from chaff, and we'll understand the real soundness of the banks that we'd want to own as stocks.
I want to thank you very much for spending time with us. Doug Scioca is the chief executive of Cavar Capital Partners. They're based in Leawood, Kansas. I want to thank our engineer, Bob Bragg, our producer, Sam Langa, Kathleen Hayes, Pim Fox. You're listening to Taking Stock on Bloomberg Radio.
Coming up, a Bloomberg Law brought to you by Deutsch Atkins PC. If you feel you've been unlawfully terminated, you owe it to yourself to call the law firm of Deutsch Atkins now for a free phone consultation. Call 800-498-0991.